The Guild of Extraordinary Feline Adventurers and the Waterdeep Irregulars present The Case of the Missing Arcanist, a Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition actual play podcast. Based on the DM's Guild adventure, The Lost Laboratory of Qualish, using adaptations from Steamforged Games' Animal Adventures. Act 1. Smoke me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast. You find yourselves waking up first thing in the morning to the sound of a violin.
Definitely wouldn't be AGR.
I'm like a lazy kid, so it won't be me either.
Vesephra will probably wake up at her usual time.
As you wake up, you can hear the fire crackling in the guild headquarters.
Just so that you're aware, Robbie will be right in front of the fire.
Okay, so waking up. Probably the fire's been stoked and the flames are pretty high in the fireplace, as the headquarters being in the cellar, it's always got a slight chill down here. Waking up, you hear the foot traffic and the horses and carts from just outside at street level, and the sound of the violin. Thaddeus is sat on the desk underneath the window, his paw on the neck of the violin, and the spectral hand taking the bow backwards and forwards across the strings, and he looks deep in thought.
So we're just waking up to see a new cat sat in front of the fire.
Would you like to describe Robbie?
Robbie is probably smaller than even the... Who's the smallest amongst you? Possibly Bai?
Probably Bai, yeah.
I would say it's me, yeah.
He's smaller than you. Very sleek, and slender, but with this strange sort of like rippled fur. He's got that angular face and ears, big ears, almost like radar dishes, if you knew what radar was. He looks strange, but also cute and appealing. He's also wearing what appears to be an item of clothing, which is this sort of strange sort of vest thing that's around him, which has pockets and some things.
Excellent. And what colour is Robbie?
He's a very dark smoky grey with sort of ambery yellow eyes. And the jacket is about the same.
So as Vesethra, possibly as previously mentioned, being the first to wake from slumber on this day, you spy this grey cat in front of the fire.
Something I've discovered about Vesethra is, yeah, ragdoll cats aren't fans of changes. So suddenly seeing this new cat, we'll probably promote her now. A slight hiss going, as instinct going, go, this is not still asleep, this is awake. Who would you be?
Who would I be? Yeah. Well, I'm Robbie.
And what are you doing here, Robbie?
I'm warming myself in front of the fire.
I can see that.
Now, what does Robbie see, John, when he looks at you?
You'd see... He'd be seeing a Russian blue cat, so grey, almost like a curled mass of grey fur, two piercing green eyes sticking around, just having a look down from the top of the barrels where she's picked as a favourite spot. Because that's where she normally lies, to just keep an eye on her new family, as it were. Not the friendliest look on her face, because there's someone new, and not the same and not the usual as it was. So mainly just an unmoving mass of grey and blue fur with two eyes that aren't quite leaving your face as she's watching you.
Are you the one called Vesethra?
That would be me, yes. And how right. Come you know this?
Right, and I can see over there, there's like a, almost like a mountain of a cat. And is that one Ajir?
That would be where you would find our drunken monk. Yes.
And from that area, you can very much smell the various flavours of liquors that are in the barrels. He seems to have certainly, I think the evening before, kind of slid down back to the barrels, back legs out in front and the belly kind of slightly bulging, the tap open and literally just pouring into his mouth. At this point, Andy, would you roll me a d10, please?
Do.
The house is owned by a pair of fairly aging sisters, and they over time have had various spells cast on them by the great Thaddeus Hall in order to be able to use the cellar as the headquarters of his guild. These spells have had an accumulative effect in that to some extent it has addled the sisters a little bit, to the point where now they see nothing strange in having a basement which they're not allowed in, but that they are occasionally instructed to order food or ales or whiskey or pieces of furniture, books and maps, and they seem to now just take it for granted that the talking cats that come and go are just a normal part of everyday life. But you have all been warned that from time to time, when you're making your way back to the guild headquarters and through the small grating opening at street level, one of the sisters may spot you, and there is the possibility that you are grabbed and taken upstairs into the house to spend an evening of pampering as a pet. Now, it just so happens that after your first adventure, that the sisters, Winifred in particular, spotted Sir Pouncelot on the steps outside the house, and as he was trying to make his way back round to the cellar, grabbed the large, fluffy, white, proud-looking cat, and he has spent the evening upstairs with the sisters, and Robbie and Vesethra spot a fairly disgruntled Sir Pouncelot pushing through the door and down the steps into the cellar. And if you want to both roll me perception checks, do you want to describe Sir Pouncelot?
Well, I'm guessing at the moment he's had, after his bit of adventure, a bit of a wash because he was a bit unclean for the combat. And as part of that, he's also been treated to a bit of a drying session. So all of his hair is white hair, which has most likely been a bit combed as well for the to get rid of those ashen parts from the burnt balling sensations. He's gone quite floofy.
Yeah.
And so his fur's sticking out quite a bit. Now got a very grumpy look on his face because he is just going
What with the perception checks?
21.
Sorry.
8 for Robbie.
8. Okay. Robbie is quite intent on the lovely heat from the fireplace and the conversation that is taking place with Vesethra, but Vesethra, keeping an eye out, sees Sir Pouncelot push through the door and instantly notices that he has a rather fetching pink bow atop his head as he comes through the door.
That's okay. Suddenly get a little giggle from Vesethra going there, going, he's not going to be happy about that.
Well, I say, not a word. And he tries to pour the horrible pink bow off his head.
It quite suits you.
As you make your way across, you hear a from one of the sofas as Walsgrave, seemingly asleep, lifts one of the eyelids and just looks across in your direction. I see you've been guests at the sisters last night. Most fetching, young man.
I try and like squeeze through different gaps in the furniture to take it off the top of my head to, because I can't reach it, just try and, you know, crawl and skim it off the top.
Let's call it an acrobatics check, in that you're trying to do strange maneuvers to rub this bow off.
I got a 21.
Yeah, so you, Robbie and Vesethra, you see it's almost like Sir Pouncelot is having a series of fits as he makes his way across the room under various pieces of furniture. There's the odd kind of clunk of cat skull against wood. But after a few minutes, he emerges from underneath one of the sideboards, a little bit ruffled, maybe slightly cross-eyed, but without the bow on top of the head. Aegir and Bai, what is happening with you guys?
With all the commotion and laughing, I'm gonna sort of stretch, being like, "What's all the racket about?" And I open my eyes up, instantly perk straight up. I'm like, "Ooh!" And I'm gonna go over to him and be like,
"It appears we have a visitor.
Is this not Amaranth?"
No, I'm not. I'm not Mr. Amaranth. He said I should come here.
And what is Robbie seeing as you approach him?
I have three very key defining features. One, I am gorgeous. Two, I have two different coloured eyes. One's blue and one's kind of a limey, greeny colour. And the third one is I have a singe mark in my left ear where part of it is missing. But the rest of me is... I'm a pretty scraggy looking thing, but I am quite sleek white fur. Not all of it's perfectly white because I am a little bit scrappy. But it's close enough. I have a little kind of little sort of walk around, and I turn to Vesethra and go, "Oh, he's so cute. Are we keeping him?"
That is to be decided.
I might stay around a little bit.
Why are you here?
I'm here because it's warm in here, right by the fire.
You said something of the wizard sending you. That is
Mr. Amaranth. Yes.
That is very like him to not actually inform us of these things.
Probably wanted to stay with his 2 feet people, and he'd got a problem with some kind of little sort of spectral kitten. And he's very elegant, isn't he, Mr. Amaranth? But he's a bit of a snooty so-and-so.
Aegir, are you waking from your drunken stupor?
He's out cold. He's going to need a prod.
Does anybody
I will do
offer?
That. I'll go and run over to Aegir because I see, and I'm just gonna like, Aegir, look at the little cat by the fire, Aegir.
What? No, don't let the monkeys take my money. What?
Aegir, look, and I kind of grab his big floof head.
What?
I'm gonna grab his floof head and turn it to the fire and go, look at that, Amaranth's brother.
So, did someone wash him on too hot a temperature and he shrunk? I don't understand.
He's so small.
How much of this barrel did you drink? You don't have to try and clear the room in one day. You'll be the death of you. Oh, jeez, what have I signed up for?
So as Robbie turns to look at Aegir, what does he behold?
Aegir is...
a drunken mess, I think.
A Norwegian forest cat. Who is enormous, even by awakened cat standards. He is chunky, like husky, I would describe him as. Maybe not fat, but certainly getting there. He's got dark grey fur, a white streak down his chest, and the only sort of distinguishing feature other than his massive size that he has. He's got a black belt wrapped around his midsection with a small barrel attached to it that he keeps some drink in at all times when he's out adventuring. But while he's not, he tends to sleep exactly where he is now, which is on top of the pile of wine barrels in the side of the cellar. So he's awoken atop of there, and as soon as he started speaking, you could smell the alcohol on his breath from the night before from across the room.
And And he looks even bigger because I'm the smallest cat other than Robbie in the room. So, and I'm the one stood next to him grabbing him. And so he looks even bigger.
Could you please let go of my face now, please?
One cat, very noticeable by their absence. Another recent companion of all of you, Bailey the Mancoon, who has proved himself to be somewhat of a fighter and somewhat, let's say, a loner and sort of rash in the decisions he makes. He does not seem to be in the room at present.
And I jump down and go, so, Amaranth, what happened to you? Are you under a spell or something? You're very small now. I don't understand.
No, you're Mr. Aegir, right? Yes. No, I'm not.
It looks like your voice as well.
No.
I'm so confused. Robbie. What is happening? I'm a Robbie?
No.
What? Someone. Vesetra, what is going on? Please explain to me. I don't understand what's happening.
Right. I will use simple words, given you seem to have drunk more than usual. I need to move you off these barrels, I think, for the next time. It would appear that Amaranth is staying with his two feeters for the time being, and that this intruder has decided to join us. So this is Robbie. This is most certainly not Amaranth. And, well, it's...
I like him.
I was going to say for Zephyr, let's be very gentle.
I think we should keep him.
Intruder, you say? Intruder, okay, I got this, don't worry. And I'll jump down and, like, stumble around the chair leg and, like, get into, like, a fighting pose in front of Robbie.
Intruder, as in not
swaying
invited.
Backwards and forwards the whole time, but he's, like, got his paws up ready to rock.
At this point, Zephyr will visibly... face paw, not quite face palm, but do cats even have palms? It'll be a face paw.
Yes.
Intruder as in not necessarily invited in, not as in need to attack him.
At this point, you hear a thud as the rather large and portly older tabby cat that is Walsgrave jumps down off the large leather sofa and pads over to some of the barrels against the wall and taps one of the taps pegged into the barrels and
I think it's time for a drink, don't you, old boy?
I agree completely. Let's go and I'll go over and help him start preparing drinks for everyone.
Yeah, so, well, he's literally seems to have put two underneath, so I think he was stepping in a little to distract you from your sort of pugilist stance.
I'll put like three drops on a saucer and slide it towards him and then just open the tap and let it fill to the absolute brim on the mine and then close it and then carry on laughing away.
He takes it quite well and just flicks the tap back on. He's taken a little bit of a liking to you as he seems to be fairly enamoured by the sort of alcohol offerings that the headquarters have. But at this point you do hear a clearing of the throat from the desk underneath the window. Thaddeus Hall, the very lithe Siamese cat with very, very sort of pointed features. He's looking across at you all with the, even in the short time that you've been at the guild, the kind of slightly disappointed, slightly disapproving look that seems always to be affixed to his face. Robbie has skills that he brings to the guild. Maybe comes and goes a little more than I would like, but in a pinch, he's a useful fellow to know.
No doubt, no doubt, but this is still a new person, it seems.
There are others in the guild that you haven't met, but you may over time.
I see. Zephyr does not look too happy about... having to look after more people, and B, going, yeah, she's not necessarily a fan of new people.
He sort of gives you a look as though he's kind of weighing up what's behind your words, and then pads across the room, jumping up onto another of the desks by the bookshelves, which is a desk that he tends to keep the books and scrolls of the moment that he's working on, and starts riffling through the papers on the desk quite impatiently. You can see him getting sort of more agitated. He always seems to be fairly agitated, unless he is nose deep in facts.
He's been like this for a while. There's something brewing, I'm sure.
You say there is brewing afoot as well? We might have beer?
You've had plenty.
We have beer, boy. We don't have to brew our own. Courtesy
maybe,
of the
maybe
sisters.
Maybe it's tea? Maybe he has some tea brewing?
Don't like tea. I'm not a fan of the tea, no.
No, I don't think so.
At this point, you do hear from above the cellar, the front door, you hear a muffled knock and the door open. And the muffled but now recognisable voice of Winifred Wimble. There's a short discussion and the door closes and footsteps come towards the cellar. And popping his head through the cellar door is a young lad, pretty much like a street urchin. And Thaddeus looks up expectantly from his desk. And the young lad comes in. I got Mr. Holmes. Sorry it's a bit late, but bit of trouble across town. But here they are. And he holds out his hand and there's a sheaf of about 6 pieces of very thin parchment in them, which Thaddeus immediately sends the spectral hand towards to sort of snatch. And at the same time, you see a small copper coin thrown across to the lad, who tips his cap. I knew it. Yes. Are you all ready for another task?
As long as it is good, I will always be ready.
Might as well, because we're here.
So you're with us, Robbie?
Well, that's part of the reason why I thought I'd come, because Mr. Amaranth told me that you got up to all sorts of exciting things. And although I might love a nice bit of fireside, and obviously the fish is so good round here.
At this point, you do smell the smell of buttered kippers
my goodness,
from the top of the stairs. And Miss Holston, the smaller, tabby lady cat that seems to look after the guild for the very preoccupied Thaddeus Hall, comes down the steps with a tray floating in front of her, which has a number of small plates on it, all of them with buttered smoked kippers on them, and she will put them in the centre of the room.
Ah, kippers, well, amazing, yeah. Yes, and I'll dive up on the table and start munching on them, and as I've got butter all in my like long shaggy fur around my face, I look over to Robbie and say, so you little one, when we all joined here, we had to explain what it is we could do, so what is it that you do that makes you think you'd be okay? Cause I don't like babysitting, I don't want that on Quest.
Robbie will have jumped straight up next to you, because there's kippers, and be, you know, eating quite delicately, but eating away. What do I do? Well, I like borrow things from people, and I sometimes don't remember where I came from and forget to put them back.
So you're a thief, yes, that's always useful.
I do a little bit of. Well, I can cast a few spells, you know.
I don't mean that as an insult at all, Robbie. A thief is very useful sometimes.
I can make traps go away. Well, I can make them stop happening.
And say AG is normally quite good at that. He makes them go away by setting them off.
I'm still here to tell the tale, am I not? So.
Yep.
And with the kippers as well, I don't know if I've ever smelled anything this delicious. So I will start munching, and as I'm munching, because I'll talk with my mouth while, but I can cast spells too. Mine are really, really strong.
Probably a quick question. Can you control the spells that you cast? Do you know what they're going to do before you cast them?
Yeah. There wouldn't be much point in casting them if I didn't know what was going to happen.
Exactly. Well, you have a foot up on bio already then, I think.
That's not true. I know what my spells are going to do.
Sometimes.
Most of the time.
Do a deception check, as you blatantly don't know what your spells are going to do.
21.
Yeah, absolutely.
I 100% believe.
Yes, even though sort of... tied very much into wild magic. The two mismatched eyes look at you with a sincerity that you are absolutely sold on the skills of this cat in front of you.
Oh, you're also like a wizard, like Mr. Amaranth, are you?
No, I'm not like Amaranth. He was not like me. He was nice. He was a nice cat, yes. I just don't think he was as strong as me, and he didn't like that. I don't think he liked that very much.
Do you think that's why he sent me?
I don't know why he sent you.
So he was probably afraid to come back.
He was afraid.
Do you think so?
He didn't strike me as the person who'd be afraid. More like he got his fur a little bit dirty and he had to have it cleaned.
But perhaps he felt he had spent too much time kitten-sitting certain individuals.
Thaddeus watches bemusedly, although not entirely happy, while this exchange goes on, and waits for you all to finish, then says, well, you're all I've got at the moment, so...
Look at you.
Don't say it like that, Thaddeus, old chap. We do you okay when we help out, right?
I'm really strong.
The last case, I believe, was to bring and, well, to find and return to their homes two children of Waterdeep.
And I think a 50% success rate's pretty damn good, don't you, for our first ever quest?
I mean,
technically we bought back four.
Yes. So
double
twice the number you were sent to find, and less than there were.
We found a bunch of children, and one of them was the one you were looking for. I think that's pretty good.
You also returned with two small spectral cats.
That was nothing to do with me.
No, for once we can't blame this one on Bai. That was a change that we have not been able to correct yet. But we might be able to one day.
I mean, technically, if you look around, we got rid of them as well, because I can't see Bailey and Amaranth's disappeared. So technically, we got rid of the spectral figures.
Not quite the way we were intending to, but yep, for once, I'm going to have to agree with Bai on this one, although I might regret doing it later.
Well, irrespective, maybe this will go better. And I only need you to return one, and I do say one person this time.
Are we searching missing children again?
No.
If there's more than one, do we leave the others?
His face glazes over for a second. You almost get the impression that he either wishes he wasn't here or that you
weren't here.
And there is a sideways glance to Walsgrave, who now seems to have a smoked kipper in his bowl of whiskey. So he seems to be smoking it a little bit more with the smoky flavour of Waterdeep's finest whiskey, who just totally oblivious to the situation, carries on, face pressed into the bowl. You won't have heard of the wondrous walking statues of Waterdeep, I suppose, presume.
The what now?
No.
They seem to have escaped my notice.
Statues should not be walking.
An astute point. Waterdeep has many defences, and the walking statues of Waterdeep are one of the city's last defences. They animate at times of great need. As he talks again, he walks over and jumps to the desk with the violin, and the spectral hand starts playing as though he's in some kind of revelry. I had heard whispers that the statues were animating again. And I have been in touch with some of the Lords of Waterdeep. And while they cannot be seen to openly communicate with me, messages, and the spectral hand lifts up one of the papers, they have been leaving in the miscellaneous columns small messages which to the uninitiated would mean little, but should you have enough of the papers and understand the method of their transmission, they have given me communication that indeed the statues are animating and that even the black staff does not seem able to stop it from happening. They have requested my talents, my brain, my deduction to solve this case, which I shall do, and I need others to perform the more everyday tasks. I would request of you that you find somebody for me and bring them here.
And who would this person be?
Have any of you ever heard of a gnome called Qualish?
That name?
No.
Does not necessarily ring a bell, no.
He was formerly a resident of Waterdeep, a scholar, and a person with a great interest in the arcane, which the walking statues are of arcane nature. There is history, I guess, that would be pertinent to understand.
Hey, Mr. Thaddeus, could I ask you a question, me being not from round here and all that? These statues, how big are they then?
A few hundred feet high. You could not have missed them, although you may. Hiding in plain sight is a skill.
Those statues, those... Oh, crikey.
Yes, exactly.
To hide a few hundred feet is more than just a skill.
They are in
that
plain
is most
view.
Impressive.
Often to be in plain view is the easiest way to hide. At times of need, they aid the city, but they also cause damage to the city because of their size. But the damage they cause is offset by the benefit that they bring. For them to animate under an unknown control when the city is at peace is of great concern, and also who may be causing that animation.
And you think this Qualish is the one causing it?
No. I do not, and Qualish has not been seen for many, many years. He left Waterdeep in search of the lost City of Glass, which I guess I must also explain more of.
Would Aja have heard of this place at all?
I'm going to say you can all do a history check. If you've got Arcana, you can do Arcana.
So Vesephra wouldn't have heard of this, I don't think. She spent most of her time in the Feywilds rather than in...
Yeah, so that's
in Faerun.
Yeah.
AJ got an 18.
18.
History.
I got a 13.
13.
Sir Pouncelor got a natural 20 for a total of 24.
AJ, and Sir Pouncelot, who suddenly goes wide-eyed and his sort of head pops up very alert, have heard of the Lost City of Glass, or Daoin Gloin. To most people, it's just a rumour, a mythical city of glass, never actually seen by anybody. As I say, to most people, it's just either a story or a fanciful tale. But the stories go that there was a craft of some sort, an interplanar craft traveling between the planes that crashed somewhere in the barrier peaks in the vicinity of the lost city of glass. And there have been rumours that the gnome Qualish went on an expedition to find this craft, that he indeed found it, and then used the technologies to build some kind of arcane experimental laboratory in the city of glass in the barrier peaks. Only sort of random rumours have returned from the region, but it is known that as a scholar, his love and understanding of the arcane grew and became quite extensive.
Would we know of the barrier peaks? Would we have heard of that area?
I'm going to say that potentially yourself and Sir Pouncelot, with the roles that you got, have a fair idea about the barrier peaks, which sit in the Earthspur Mountains in the north of Faerûn, and it is a massive range of mountains, which is probably most famous for, at the centre of it, amongst its highest peaks, there is a huge glacier called the Glacier of the White Worm. I would request that you undertake travel to find Qualish. Maybe he's alive, maybe he's dead, but he is probably our best hope.
He's a gnome, isn't he, Thaddeus? Ingenious little fellows.
Was he from the mountain or from the forest?
That I do not know.
I see.
His searches took him to the mountains, so one would hope that he had knowledge of the terrain he was traversing.
How far away are these mountains, then, that we're going to be going to?
Robbie, distance isn't an issue.
Well, if you've got short legs like me.
You won't need your legs to travel. Well, at least not to the general vicinity.
But don't we need amaranth for travelling in such a way as you speak?
There is a portal circle that we can gain access to in the region and to also return, but should you need in an emergency to open up a hasty portal back to the headquarters, then yes.
Oh, but Bai can do that, can't she? Because she's a magic person.
I was just about to say, as soon as Amaranth's not here, does that mean I get to use the portals?
At this point, Versace just covering her eyes, going,
For the first time, you probably see fear in Thaddeus's rather stoic face.
I take it, I kind of go up and kind of lean against it and go, I'm clearly highly capable.
Indeed.
I'm very strong.
Perhaps with guidance we might be able to, but
I'm not sure what the emergency would have to be to make me jump through a portal that Bayard produced. It would have to be a pretty serious emergency, I think.
I think
I'm really good at directions.
It would have to be a case of life or death, and I am sure that it would become a case of death and death.
No, that is not always true. Only a very small portion of things die accidentally.
Your track record speaks of a higher percentage than one may like as a baseline.
I would like more than three of us to return if we use a portal.
Would it blame stupid Amaranth with his taking all the magic and then going away?
At this point, Thaddeus actually looks round the group of the six of you and seems to calculate, and I think three would be acceptable if they were the right ones.
All joking aside, let's hope this entire family returns.
My concern, and he looks at Bai, is arcane magics around wild magic.
But if we are looking for a scholar of the arcane, once we find him, he should be able to portal us back himself. It should not be a problem, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, it might be a case that all we find is a corpse, and we must discover what happened.
Indeed. Do you accept?
One second, I just need to do one thing real quick. And he's going to take a kipper and shove it entirely in his mouth, as much of it as he can get in. And then he's going to jump down and just fill his barrel with some wine. While he's chewing on this hard kipper that's like half hanging out of his mouth.
I was going to say, so the tails, yeah.
Yeah, the tail, like, and some of the body's flapping around as he's trying to chew on the head area as he's filling this barrel.
I'm ready to go now.
Sighing, he returns to the papers and then stops and looks back at you. I think that I mentioned that you will need help in this endeavour. There is someone in Waterdeep that may be able to assist you, and that I would wish you to visit before you leave. He may require that somebody accompanies you, but I think we need the advice and assistance of Anadi Zephyrus. I have already sent missives and you are expected.
Anadi? How could they help?
He is an entrepreneur and somewhat of a scholar of map. If you are to find the lost city, I very much feel that you will need his assistance.
Well, that is most interesting.
He likes to be known as the cartophile.
Where do we find him then?
Can we at least go through a portal to get to him?
It's within walking distance. Miss Holston has agreed to take you there.
Right. Well, we've had my kipper. I'm ready.
Are we up underway?
It would seem, if we are all as prepared as we are going to be, should we allow our most excellent leader a bit of quiet? I think that might be wise for the both of us.
You always get the impression that Thaddeus needs the muscle, if you want, or whether it's magical muscle or physical muscle. Those aren't things that he undertakes himself, but at the same time it is a great grievance to him to have to actually interact with the help as such. Thaddeus turns back to the papers, once again the violin strikes up the same tune which he always seems to play when he's thinking.
And I'll be outside waiting for Mrs. Holston, and AJ is going to start walking out, and as he walks past Wall's grave, he's just going to put a paw on Wall's grave shoulder and just whisper in his ear, "Good luck, old boy. I hope it goes well for you while we're away."
I'm used to it. He has good intentions, you know.
We would not be here if we did not believe the same, but it still must be hard on you.
Oh.
Stay safe, my friend.
There are compensations, he says, again tapping the tap into the on position and pretty much taking the position you were in the previous night, back against the barrel, paws pushed out in front of him, mouth open underneath.
Head to the window and jump on outside and wait by the front door.
Yep, I am. I'm going to completely misread the situation as usual and follow Aegea, but on the way out, just shout, "Smoke me a kipper, I will be back by dinner." As I trot towards the window.
Okay, bye, Rimmer.
And indeed, sat outside is the diminutive form of Miss Holston.
When you say diminutive, is she... She's obviously an awakened cat.
Yeah, she's probably where Walsgrave as a tabby is kind of the size of, like I said before, like a bobcat or a small lynx. Miss Holston is probably half as big as a normal tabby, so she just looks like a large normal cat.
About the same size as Robbie.
All right, Robbie.
All right, there.
Right,
lovely kippers.
Oh, thank you. I poached them myself in butter. And you've got a very similar accent to me, Robbie.
Are you from the same area?
I don't know. Where are you from, Robbie?
Everland.
Oh, are you? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your surname, Robbie?
Softpore.
Softpore. No, I don't know any softpores. Loose pads. For my people.
The loose pads.
Yeah.
That rings a slight bell.
That sounds like you should maybe see a veterinarian or something.
I don't know what they're talking. I can't even understand what he's saying half the time.
Miss Holsden sort of pipes up that really, possibly you should be getting along to see the cartophile Anardi, and she leads you through the back alleys and off the main streets, with the sounds of the busy streets sort of fading more into the background. And you probably travel for 15 minutes, moving quite quickly as cats, through less busy streets, avoiding sort of the gaze of passers-by. But eventually you find yourselves at quite a narrow three-story house. Well, he's aware that you're possibly coming, so I'm gonna leave you here, I think, and I'll let yourselves do the introductions.
Thank you for guiding us to here. Thank you.
I'm gonna be making my way back, and I'll see you later, probably, hopefully.
Until later, then.
Right.
Take care.
Okay. You know, it's so nice to speak to somebody that talks like me.
Who can actually speak properly.
Hey, that's it. Yeah.
This group's getting weirder and weirder.
Well, certainly has lately, anyway. But, yeah, see you later, Robbie. If you fancy, little supper kipper, you just give me a knock.
I'd be right there.
Lovely. She disappears back down the alley. You are presently outside this quite narrow, it seems like, sort of one room width, three-story house, which is built on a smaller scale, sandwiched between the larger houses either side of it.
Is there like an obvious entryway for us?
There is a door. Yes, there is a door. A nice green painted door with a large brass knocker.
Okay, I actually use mage hand.
You form your spectral hand and you knock on the rather gaily and freshly painted green front door. And after a few moments, the door creaks open and a very ruddy gnome face with a pair of small round spectacles on the end of the nose looks through.
Yeah. Oh, hello.
Hello.
I'm speaking in common to this gnome.
Yes. Yes.
We've been sent by Mr. Thaddeus to come and have a little chat with you.
Why do you say it's a little chat? Are you heightist?
My dear sir, can't you see? We are also very small ourselves.
I am not small. I am large in stature.
Wait, you're certainly a lot larger than I am.
I think you look pretty big.
How tall is this gnome in comparison to Aegea?
You stand when you're on all four paws, probably about 2 foot tall. The gnome is standing probably 3 foot one.
So I'm going to go stand next to him. I'm not going to say a word. I'm just going to stand next to him and just sort of crane my neck up, you know, cats do sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to touch him. I'm just going to sit next to him and just be like...
Very amusing. If it wasn't for Mr. Thaddeus, I would... not entertain the possibility of speaking to you. So, well, please come in, I suppose, if we are going to have a friendly discourse.
Yeah, I hope so.
You enter into the hallway, and the first thing that hits you as you enter into this hallway is that every available inch is covered in shelves and books and scrolls. You've never seen so many. The whole of the hallway just smells of parchment, aging parchment and polished wood. And he walks in front of you down the hallway and through the right into a study filled with very comfortable sort of wingback leather armchairs and tables piled with books. rugs, ornate rugs on the floors and floor to ceiling, shelves covered in books and scrolls and pieces of parchment. And where there are spaces, there are clocks. The sound of ticking is almost deafening.
Are they all ticking the same time? I'm just going to have a quick look around to see if they're all the same.
Do a perception check.
They're all the same time. 25.
No, there seem to be several different times showing. He walks over to the fireplace, which isn't lit, and putting his hands behind his back, he turns to look at you all. Well,
Mr. Thaddeus suggested that you might be a useful person to come and see. He said you were expecting us. I assume you are aware, at least sort of the purpose for us being here?
He said very little. It was a rushed communication. He said that he required my considerable expertise and that he would be sending some of his... How did he put it? Disappointing new charges, I think he put it as, to ask for some kind of assistance from me.
Yes, well, descriptions aside, we will be looking for directions, I suppose, would you not say?
Well, yes, yeah. I am a cartographer. I have catalogued and collected maps and from all over the multiverses.
This city that was lost, that is a city of glass.
The lost city of glass, correct.
And, who was it? Mr. Qualish. And Mr. Qualish went in search of it. And we got to try and find Mr. Qualish. So if we kind of know where the lost city of glass is, we have a chance of finding Mr. Qualish. But I suppose if the lost city of glass, if it's been, like, because Mr. Thaddeus showed me, obviously, you can see something that's glass when it's right there. But I seem to remember when you put glass in water, it's a lot harder to see. So I wonder if somebody has managed to put the big city of glass in some water, which would make it really hard to see.
A whole city in water. I think you are getting mixed up with you put the water in the glass, not the glass in the water. But that is something else. Yes, I have heard of this city. And as you said, it is a lost city. And there is a clue there. I've also heard of this Qualish, yes. He is of my own kind, but sadly, as eccentric.
So, are you saying that despite all your maps and books, you do not have a location?
I did not say that at all, did I? You're putting words in my mouth. I am an expert in my field. I may have never found the place, although I do not leave my rather comfortable surroundings, for obvious reasons, but it could be found, maybe, if I put my mind to it.
And would you be able to put your mind to it?
He walks away to some of the shelves and starts. There's like a little sort of library ladder on small wheels. She runs round the wall and starts going up and pulling out pieces of parchment and books off the shelves, bringing them down, starting to create some piles of them. Seems to take no notice of you for a while. It says, yes, it is in the Urspur Mountains.
In the where, sorry?
The Urspur Mountains.
Interesting.
But there is not exactly known, but there have been many rumours, and my, that unfortunate gnome, he apparently led an expedition to find some kind of craft, has no interest to me, but my interest lies in mapping all of the lands and other planes as well, so I may be able to help you for a price.
Right.
I'm going to tap Vesethra on the shoulder and very loudly so everyone can hear, although I'm sort of stage whispering to Vesethra. It's okay. The Anadi Zevras that we were told of would have been seeking out this challenge to find this hidden city. His reputation preceded him. Maybe this small gnome here is an imposter. Maybe we should leave and try and find the real great cartographer. The real one who is famous throughout the land for being able to find any cities.
You haven't even asked what my price is.
My dear sir, that would be a definite thing to know, but surely Thaddeus himself would have spoken to you about how...
And surely aid in finding a lost city by a famous cartographer would be cost enough for any information that you can give us?
I do not care about the city, but I do care about mapping the city. So, my price will be that one of my assistants goes with you to help find the city and will take any necessary materials that I have that may aid in this endeavor, but that he will map the journey and record it. And any maps that are drawn or any information as to the areas that you might make is handed over to me so that you find the alchemist, arcanist, and I have the knowledge of I know where the city is, and maybe I will impart it to others as my discovery.
This is not the Nadi that I was expecting. Is this how you made your fame as the cartophile, by standing on the shoulders of others and claiming their discoveries as your own?
It is a skill to bring people together to get them to collect the information that you should wish. And after all, it is my hand that draws the finished maps and catalogues them.
So you are happy for us to go out and do all of the hard work and then... you know what? I don't care that much. That's fine.
You will not find the city without the aid of my assistant. Maybe if you find where you're going first, then... I don't know what kind of credit you expect on the map. I suppose I could draw a small cat in the corner.
I am sure there would be ways for us to work together in this. I have switched accents on purpose, as the Zephyr is now speaking gnomish to the gnome.
I believe that you are in the employ of Mr. Thaddeus, and he has requested you to come here. Maybe you should talk to Thaddeus about any recognition for this. I am playing a part, as you are.
That is, I suppose, fair enough. Now, what information could you be giving to us?
Then I will select one of my assistants to help you in this endeavor. He goes over to one of the writing tables and pulls out a drawer and takes a small whistle out of it and blows it without... Actually, you're all cats, so you hear a very high-pitched call from this whistle, which would be well out of human range, more in the range of kind of bats. And after a few moments, you hear a whirring and a clicking, and into the room comes about the same size as the gnome, small mechanical figure would be the only way to describe it. The head is square. It has a single lens in the middle of the head. Quite fragile looking pair of arms and pair of legs. And it whirs to in front of the gnome at the fireplace, stops and swivels round to look at you all. I would like to introduce you to your guide. His name is Gearbox, but he prefers Doohickey. He will come with you and he will map the expedition. He has some skills beyond his mapping skills, but I am charging you all with keeping him safe and returning him.
How do you fix one of these things?
They fix themselves, each other.
I see. So if things do not go to plan, will we be able to repair him?
I am hoping that you won't break him.
It is not us breaking him that I am worried about.
He has a sense of self-preservation, so if you do your part, then things should be okay.
So long as he can follow the group, then he should be okay.
So now we have your assistant and we have the information. We heard of some sort of teleportation circle that may get us
near to the place you are?
That is not my place. That is, I believe you have that at your guild.
So before we leave, is there any last minute information you want to give us?
I will give everything that is needed to Dohiki here, and he will lead you as best as he can.
Fair enough.
Then I believe our business is done.
I'll just turn around and head towards the door.
Okay, so you leave the gnome's house with Dohiki in tow as you enter back out onto the streets of Waterdeep. You have been listening to The Case of the Missing Arcanist, a Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition Actual Play Podcast. The players: Dave as Aegir, Forest Cat Drunken Monk Master, Jane as Bailey, Mancoon Fighter, Megan as Bai, Wild Magic Sorcerer, Mark as Robbie, Cornish Rex Arcane Trickster, Andy as Sir Pouncelot, Persian Paladin, and John as Vesethra, Archangel Russian Blue Druid.